When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
You have your 10. You still have
your 10. Okay. I already got my 10, bro.
You already have your 10?
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, Ian's on top of it this month.
I know.
For once.
Listen.
And you're wearing sleeves? You have a sleeved shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Look at you.
I'm still eating breakfast, though.
You're still eating breakfast. Listen, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right? As the poet Meatloaf once said, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yes, of course, the good Lord Meatloaf.
So we're recording, and I like to start episodes where I, because listen, they said something on this week's My Brother and Me podcast that I really resonated with, which is, we are not bursting into people's living rooms. Like, they're actively deciding to watch what we do. Mm-hmm. So they are making the decision to come in, and they know what they're getting into, right? Like, they've seen,
hypothetically,
but realistically, most people who, and unless you're a new viewer, which if you are, my condolences.
Welcome. Okay. Different energies. I like that.
But you know what you're getting into with Mind Sculptors episode.
Yeah.
And so, like, none of this is unexpected for the wizened among us. And yeah. I just got to say, I don't know. Are you familiar with those fucking Lime scooters that just clutter every street corner in any sort of metropolitan area in America?
Lime scooters?
They have like a bunch of different brands, but they're the ones where you can, like, they're the little electric scooters where you get the app and you scan it and then you can, like, go right around on the sidewalk like an asshole.
Yeah.
So they suck. Everybody, I hate them with a passion.
Okay.
Mostly because of the fact that they just pile up on street corners and, you know, they just appear and there's not a whole lot you can do about it.
Okay.
So a group of people in our apartment complex, I want to say it was Saturday night, maybe it might have been Sunday night,
what
arrived home at our complex on a bunch of these scooters.
Okay.
And there was a good cluster of them, right? Like a good solid amount of people arrived. These motherfuckers didn't take the scooters back. They're just sitting in front of our apartment. And not only I did move some of them because they left them directly in front of the door that we use to enter and exit our building.
Okay.
Listen, I went to the Louisville Slugger Museum a few weeks ago and I got this bat that they, this little bat that they gave us, right? And I don't think it's very sturdy. It's not made out of great wood.
Remember, but this can be used in a court of law.
The other thing that drives me nuts and makes me want to use this is there's a guy in our parking or in our complex too, who just when there isn't a parking spot right next to the building, he just decides to double park people and then doesn't move.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, fuck you. That's that's how I'm feeling. That's where I'm at right now. I just took the dog out and I almost tripped over a cluster of fucking Lime scooters. And there's a motherfucker double parked because he can't be bothered to park an extra row back. And it's not like you've been to my apartment complex. It's not like it's a terribly deep parking lot. Right. Like if you just park a little bit farther back, it's not like you're walking super long. You're walking like an extra 50 feet. Oh no.
Sure. Almost.
So that's where I'm at today for this episode.
I love that we're feeling big feelings. That's good. Yeah.
Lots of big feelings. I got to get the big feelings out now before we get into the podcast or before we get into the episode. Because this month was an interesting month.
Okay.
Across a lot of different metrics from the perspective of I don't feel like a lot of stuff changed dramatically in a huge way. But there were like a lot of micro moves, I feel like is a good way of putting it, that happened statistically this month. This is my seamless transition from bitching to talking about this month.
Yeah. Transition seems seamless is when you mention how seamless.
When you point out what you're doing. Not a lot of movement that I feel like that I saw. There's like a little bit of just a lot of positioning. You know, it's like if you're in a NASCAR race and people are just kind of like jockeying for position, but not really moving a whole lot. But it's like the middle of the race. And I don't know. This analogy is kind of going.
Can I gently suggest that not everything has to be a metaphor? Like sometimes you can just say things move and it doesn't have to be like, hey, this is like cars moving sometimes, right? Like sometimes things can move and it could just be like a normal thing that moves.
You know, can you tell that I was a philosophy major in college? Because everything has to be abstract. it was kind of, there were a lot of events that hit the deck stats for the metagame tracking threshold. There were, I want to say, 6, 8, 10, somewhere around 15 or 16 events that were over the 50 person threshold, which is like a big number. We generally don't have that many.
Without the size cap, there were 24 tournaments last weekend.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So, there's no place to play CDH. Competitive Magic is dying. So there was a lot of stuff like that, but a lot of what we saw as far as numbers go was a lot of things that kind of have been happening for a while with a few notable exceptions that we will talk about in this episode. Before we get too deep, I am going to I'm going to bitch a little bit more. Cool. And instead of starting off with my honorable mentions, I'm starting off with my dishonorable mentions. This is I see these on my deck stats collection every month, and every month they have just awful results. Please stop playing these decks for the love of God. Number one, Kirk, son of Yawgmoth. I swear to God, if I have to type that dumbass name into my Excel spreadsheet one more time, I'm going to lose it. That deck, I have yet to see it, except for like maybe one month out of the I think we're at 9 that I've tracked. Like it's like 1 for 9 for having an above 20% win percentage for the month. Like it is, it's just, guys, it's mono black, mono color in it. Like, come on. Like it's, that's really all it is. I see this deck get consistently put up there, and like I hear people like Tyler talk about how good Carrick is, and I hear, you know, people who play around Carrick tell me how great Carrick is, and then I see it in events and I'm just like, man, I wish I knew how great Carrick is, because it just doesn't put up results, guys.
Carrick, you have to convince you how great Carrick is.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's where I'm at. But you know, on a more positive note, looking at our honorable mentions, what is a deck or decks that you kind of want to highlight for the month before we get into this top 10?
Yeah, as everyone knows, I'm pretty fucking dino-pilled right now.
Yeah, you are. We both are dino-pilled, let's be real.
Yeah. Itali's been crushing it. Like, honestly, the past month, there's been 5 entries for Itali. 3 top 16s. These are in 50-plus player tournaments. And yeah, that's, you know, 60% conversion rate for the deck for pilots for this month. I think that's pretty good.
I actually think it's like a pretty competitive deck, if I'm being honest. Like, I think it's like really close, which is saying a lot for a Gruul deck.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the thing is, right, you can say what you want about like my ability to bring decks to tournaments and do well with them, right? But at the end of the day, you know, I have brought decks that's a lot harder to win with, and Itali's not one of those decks. If you get comfortable with the blade patterns, it's actually pretty insane. The card velocity is pretty insane. The deck is able to push wins really, really aggressively. It's hard to interact with. And genuinely, like, yeah, it feeds the living shit out of Aristic Study, but like, there are times where...
You know what else does? Fucking Rog'Sai. Like, it's...
There are times when I've jammed to like 3 Rhystic Studies and, you know, I still win because Itali just rips that many cards, right? And also you get to play things like Vexing Shusher and Conqueror's Flail and Defense Grid and Autumn's Veil, and I can keep going, right? Pyroblast, Red Blast, right? Like, it doesn't suck at that.
This is also my honorable mention, for what it's worth.
Oh, yeah.
It's it did not show up on the deck stats, but goddamn, like I think I played like 6 games with your Itali deck at MagicCon Chicago, and I think I win like 50% on it.
Yeah.
And like when we talk about this deck, one of the things that I think is really important to like kind of note with it is it feels like it has some of those similar play patterns with Rog'Sai, but without the like the nuances and the like difficult, like what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't have the like difficult avenues that you have to kind of maneuver through. And part of that is like restrictive, right? Like, part of that is it just doesn't have the tools that like a Rog'Sai has as far as being able to navigate some more tricky game spaces. Because of that, it's also one of those decks where I'm pretty sure I could hand it to my wife who started playing Magic a week ago and she'd win a game or two. Like, the deck is that powerful. So
yes, but I also think like I don't want to underestimate to the viewership like how I think the deck's actually pretty difficult to pilot correctly. I think it's got like that Kinnan thing where it like it can be piloted to a decent floor fine enough, right? But like I do think like non-deterministic Storm, not using your own deck, playing to the percentage chances of like what you're gonna flip, and knowing like, okay, you know, how many iterations of my ability am I going to be able to do this turn? Am I going to have to like manual food chain combo? Am I going to have to do all this math correctly and then iterate like through, okay, how am I now, these cards have come up, what's my best play pattern for being able to navigate the 25 permanents on my board and like execute the things correctly? So I will say, I think that might be my only disagreement here with your assessment of the deck. I think piloting it at 100% is actually like akin to like
Clark's I definitely agree with that, but I think like where I differ is that I think that it's like baseline difficulty is just like significantly lower than, you know, Clark Sakashima or even Kinnan or even Rog'Sai, right? Like, I think that those decks that have like the very clear game plan of what they're doing, Itali is just so straightforward, because every card in the deck is make a copy of Itali, make Cat mana, or get more cards to get more mana to get out Itali, right? Like, the deck does a thing, and because of that, it does it extraordinarily well. And I have found myself really enjoying playing that deck, and I am definitely high on it. I want to see more people pick it up because I kind of want to see what it does in a broader audience.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a lot of potential there. And the fact that I'm even saying that about a Gruul deck is shocking because I don't think I've ever believed in a Gruul deck ever. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Let's get into this power ranking episode here. Now that we are a little bit deeper into the episode, let's start off here at number 10. What do you got here at 10? Last month you had Atraxa.
Yeah, 10, I have Rog Thrass. Okay. I think we've seen it do a little bit of an uprise. I was looking at like a lot of the numbers that you had combined with a lot of the numbers that were like just throughout the page. It's got good results so far, but it hasn't been played a ton. It just hit that minimum cap of 10, right?
Yeah, it barely sneaked into the to the metagame.
Yeah, and it's like it's doing really well at that 10 mark, right? So it is important to know. Also, speaking of Rog Thrass, where we're talking about Teemer Thrasios decks, I, you know, some people would put Dargo Thrasios on this list for this month. I purposefully omitted it because the more numbers you filter upwards for Dargo Thrasios, the worse this deck does, right? So the results on 50 something player tournaments compared to the, I believe I did 100 or 80 player tournaments, and it was like 1 in 14. Right. So for me, you know, a deck that like goes upward like that and sort of filters down is a little bit concerning. Right. Now, Rog Thrass, on the other hand, a lot more explosive. Well, I shouldn't say a lot more explosive. There are different types of explosive.
They're just different decks, right? Like they do very different things.
I don't know about very different, right? At the end of the day, I guess Rog Thrass is more Thrass based in the sense that like you're usually not going to see Underworld Breach Lines. You're much more likely to just be like pure creature combo, but like definitely.
Well, it's much more of a polymorph deck, right? Like almost.
No,
like,
no, most
not even decks
are not playing a polymorph anymore. Yeah,
interesting.
There are some that are still doing it, right? But Rog Thrass a lot of the time has been like the very low to the ground. Like, I guess it like a lot of people can trace the origins of this version like back to Sam Black kind of popularizing it a little bit, right? But like people like Espen, who has been playing that deck a lot at tournaments, and like folks like that who've been revving this deck a decent amount, just like Infinite Mana, Thrasios, Rog. There are people doing, you know, as I mentioned, some of the polymorph stuff, but I don't think those are most of the top results that we have for the last month. I could be wrong, but
yeah. I got to be honest, I did not dig too deep into the deck list for the decks sub 20 tournament entries, mostly because of the fact that there were just like almost 30 decks this month. So I did not dig too deep into the deck list. But no, I totally see where you're coming from. I do think like what Sam Black is doing right now with that deck in as far as popularizing it is going a really long way.
So I am going through here and of the three people who made top cuts in over 64s, a couple of them were, so we're like split 50-50 right now. Okay. Looks like as far as like poly non-poly builds,
which is like a good thing to see, right? Like that's generally a number that is indicative of a powerful commander pairing.
Agreed.
But yeah, no, that's a pretty solid pick there. For what you
numero
got.
10.
Numero 10. My number 10 here is Najeela the Blade Blossom. Najeela is like when Bowmasters got printed at first, Najeela backslid a little bit, but not like horrifically. You know, you can kind of trace the origins of this backslide a little bit. But it's starting to look almost identical to Rog'Sai when you look at the stats. Has a great Swiss record, 27% win-loss percentage, has a 31.5% I should say top 16 percentage, so it's getting to top 16s at a reasonable rate. The issue is then it has no tournament wins and only three top four cuts, which is a 5% top four cut rate, which is abysmal. I was low on it last month, but I wanted to give it time to kind of you know, gestate, see exactly if it, you know, adjusts. But I think what we said last month about Najila is continuing to be true of that. The Rog'Sai Turbo Najila build is not cut out for what this metagame is offering right now. Again, it will go back to the thing that we have been saying for ever at this point, is that you've got three different types of commanders. You've got the commanders that are card advantage, commanders that are outlets, and commanders that are combo pieces. And when you have commanders that are combo pieces, you have to compensate on the back end. You can't just go burr. You don't have the card advantage or the card or the mana acceleration that even like a Rog'Sai gives you, right? I think that's something a lot of people forget when they're building this deck similar to Rog'Sai, is that Rog'Sai is so low to the ground because of what that commander allows you to do that you kind of don't have that same issue. It effectively comes out to be like card advantage in the command zone in a really, you know, weird way. If you, you think, depending on how you think of card advantage. And so it is important to revisit. I'm going to continually say this, the Najila deck move. I'm going to continually tell people you got to move more mid rangey. Your Swiss results don't matter. They really don't. You've got to get up to, you've got to be able to get, make a top 16, and that's it. Once you get to a top 16, it doesn't matter how good you were during the Swiss. If you can't move through the top 16, I'm going to hold your deck accountable for that, honestly. And Najila is currently starting to look like a Dallas Cowboys and less like a Green Bay Packer. People who watch sports will get that reference, Ian, don't worry. Next up, Ian, what do you have at number 9? Last month you had Dargo Thrasios, and that was omitted. So what do you got this month?
This is Atraxa. Atraxa is doing fine. It's not overperforming. It's doing the same boring shit that it's been doing this whole time. Some people are going to be really good at playing that. It's I don't know. Now I'm starting to sound like a Traxa hater. I think the deck is just doing what other decks are doing, just slightly worse. If you like the card Traxa, that's super sick. I just think there's no innovation happening with the archetype, and we're in a place in this format where I think you need to be innovating on what you're doing. If you're going to try and win games, you need to surprise people. And if your surprise to people is like, I'm playing four colors in value engines, it's like, great. You're doing
good
it.
For you. Thrasios Timna's win percentage is sub 20%. It doesn't work.
And Atraxa does it way better. Let's not get that wrong, right? Like, don't get it twisted. But it's just, it's going to keep doing fine.
But here are some numbers for you. For those Atraxa pilots out there, just to kind of hammer home this point. Atraxa did not make my top 10 this month. It fell off my rankings, and it's entirely because of this number right here, which is a 24.5% win percentage just across the board, no tournament wins, a 14% top 16 percentage, that's super low, and then a 3% top 4 percentage, that is so low that it's barely worth counting, right? Like, it is so, like, just that's not entirely fair. 3% is like significant as far as, you know, how top fours work, right? Like, you know, you're generally in between like 15 is like the high end for top four percentage, right?
Sure.
But the thing is here is that we now have a trend of Atraxa putting up numbers basically like this for several months in a row now. And I, just like you, have not seen any innovation from this deck where I think that it's worth talk like or worth like ranking personally. And like you have it here at 9. So, I mean, Traxa pilots, what the fuck you doing?
No, but I mean, you're right. Like it's doing fine. Right. Like, which is just not what you want from a top deck in the format. Right.
Yeah. Again, if you're, your Swiss record don't mean shit if you're not doing anything in the top 16. You also got to make top 16s too, which, you know, but, my number nine, this is where I have Dargo Thrasios. Dargo Thrasios had a very good month overall. Again, I think that what you said is very relevant, that when you filter, the more you filter up on, tournament size, it definitely scales downwards. There's kind of some There are some interesting and kind of troubling numbers here. This is why I have it at nine. It's only got a 20% top 16 percentage. So it's only converting about 20% of the time, with a 25% win percentage. However, part of why I'm putting it in this top 10 is because it did manage to win two tournaments this month. And when you are able to get a top or just a tournament win percentage that is like north of 2%, you're doing something correct, because tournament wins are not handed out to everybody, right? Like there are not very many of them.
Yeah, I think it's also important to note that like one of them was Freedom Waffle on this, his pet deck, you know?
Yeah,
I
mean? Yeah.
I think that's a little bit of context to be given, right? And if Freedom Waffle is the only one who can do well with this deck, that's not good for the deck, right? Like,
yeah.
Not to take away from the other person who won.
Yeah, but. No, I agree with you. That's why I have it at nine. I don't think it comes in and out of my like bottom two spots, like kind of regularly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dargo Thrasios at nine. I don't know. It's fine. It does a thing. I like the deck because I think it does a lot of cool stuff that I think is fun. But overall, when you look at the numbers, it's fine. It's performing slightly better than Nigella. So even if it's because of a handful of pilots, it's still performing slightly better than Nigella. So
yeah,
that's why I have it number nine. Ian, what do you have at number eight?
At number eight, we got the fairy boy himself, Talion. Okay. Kind lord. I think Talion's really interesting. The numbers are like sort of middling on it, right? But also after seeing it this weekend, so I was at a local store in Mass, and just every Talion pilot was just free winning games. like genuinely, I it is amazing to me that these commander can literally sit there and like kind of interact at some point and then just be like, oh, what, me? I'm just a Talion trigger. All right, catch you guys later. And then like 10 minutes later,
Don't worry about the Blood Chief's Ascension. It's fine.
Right. And like, yeah, the Blood Chief's even like the scary card in the deck, right? But like, there just gets to a point where it's like, yeah, I'm actually going to beat you down with this commander. It's like, that's a real win con, that deck. Yep. It's like, it's crazy. Crazy.
Well, it's also because of the fact that people, I know that Blood Chief isn't like the big thing that makes it scary or whatever, right, but the amount of times I see people like with that, I know have a mental misstep in hand, right? Just pass on the Blood Chief. I'm just like, what the fuck, Christ, are you doing?
Never
do that.
No, absolutely never.
Like, just counter the Blood Chief. If you can counter the Blood Chief, Jesus, that's Christ.
Like, yeah. It's like letting Rog'Sai have a Mystic Remora. Like you just don't like,
it's just people do dumb shit when they're playing against this deck. I think is like my biggest takeaway is people like forget how to play Magic.
I mean, that would not surprise me, right? The whole point of the deck is to just sort of like play Magic and let people make mistakes into you until they're at three life and you hit them in the air, right?
Yeah. And then worst case scenario, you're just like, oh, lost his Oracle, Demonic Consultation. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Talion's very good. I think Talion's very strong. Many competent players can treat it like a control deck that it is. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've watched as players that I would not consider, you know, the most skilled control players execute insane Talion wins. So, like, if that's the floor on it, then I think it's a very good deck.
Yeah. No arguments from me. My number eight, this is not... this is a max deck, but not that max. It's the other max. This is where I have Obnixilus, Captive Kingpin. Mm-hmm. This is a deck that also won a tournament this month. Has very, I mean, it, let's just be, I'm just gonna be straight with you. I could put up the numbers blind of both these, of both Talion and Obnixilus right next to each other. Yeah. And you tell me which one is which, because they look identical. A lot of the, Obnixilis is just one of those decks that just does a thing, it does it well, and it's kind of annoying because it's like, once it gets rolling, it's like, oh, cool, well, I guess I'm just dead. So Obnixilis, good deck. I'm a big fan of it. I don't know if it's a deck for me. Like I said, I don't love Rakdos decks, but I do think this is a pretty solid deck, and it just kind of keeps performing. So Obnixilis at number 8. Number 7, Ian, this is where you had Thrass Bruce last month. What do you have here this month?
Yeah, no one's playing Thrass Bruce, so like I don't have it on my top 10 this month because it was literally like, I don't know, not a ton of people on it.
There were 16.
Really?
16 on my thing, and no notable results.
Woof. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. That's a little sad to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got one 11th placer. Woof. Yeah, deck is not doing fantastic. I would be interested with more time in my hands to see which versions it is being run with. Mm-hmm. I'm already seeing some spice in some of these inclusions, but that being said, it looks. My point is, it's. I don't know.
It's not Thrass Bruce here at number 7. What do you have at number 7 though?
Yeah. not Thrass Bruce. Instead, I have Najeela. Najeela's okay. Doing fine. You know, it is still consistently putting up pretty decent numbers. I mean, 27% conversion rate's not bad over the amount of tournaments we have here, right? It's. I mean, we kind of talked about it. It's finding that arc, right, of Rog'Sai. Not much more to be said about it. It does have more pivot plans, arguably, than Rog'Sai does, right? Rog'Sai is faster. Najeela has one card combos.
But the thing that's wild is some of these decks that I've seen that are doing the like turbo Najeela stuff aren't fucking playing Duravi. I don't get it.
I don't think you played Najeela without Duravi. That's crazy to me. I think you have to play both things, right? Like if you're playing Najeela and not and like just playing bad Rog'Sai, then why are you playing Najeela? You know what I mean?
Yeah, fully agree. Send tweet. Yeah,
that's weird. I hope people get off that trend because that's a little comical, to be honest.
I mean, there was somebody I played that was playing Najeela at Chicago who straight up did not have like Derevi in their deck. And I was just sitting there like, what? Okay. Not my choice, but you know, whatever. But yeah, so Najeela here at number 7. I don't have any qualms with that. Makes a lot of sense.
Yep, that's about it. I mean, Najeela, it not much to be said about it, right? It's just people are playing blockers is the problem, genuinely. So the deck's worse.
Gotta up that mid-range plan, guys. Mm-hmm. Number 7 for me, this is where I have Rog'Sai last month. This is where I have Rog'Sai this month. It stays exactly the same. It had a pretty good month, actually, as far as Rog'Sai goes. It actually managed to crack double digits on its top 4 conversion percentage, which is like a first for this deck. That being said, it also just didn't convert any tournaments with that. So, you know, that's also worth noting. Overall, though, like Rog'Sai, I've said this for months. I've been saying it for almost a year at this point. Rog'Sai is good. It's not great. It's kind of exactly. It's like this number 6-7, like mid tier deck, I feel like, is a good way of looking at it. So, the funny thing is that people are like,
completely miss Lua just popping in the background there.
I like vaguely heard it. Hi, Lua. Welcome to the Mind Sculptors.
Hi, I didn't know your door was open and you didn't have a green screen on, so I got nervous. Okay, bye.
And we're keeping it in.
Yeah, of course.
But so Rog'Sai right here, like I said, it's like that mid-tier deck that I think is very good in the right hands. I think it's hilarious how many people are like, man, Cal, you really hate Rog'Sai. And then they talk to Ian, like Ian has all of these like nice opinions about Rog'Sai, and then you're fucking on mental misplay, quite literally shitting on the deck And people are like, yeah, Cal hates that deck. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Also, the mental misplay edit is for sure going to be one that's a little more contrarian than anything else.
Oh, sure. it's just so funny to be there. Like, oh, man, Cal, Ian loves Rog'Sai and Cal hates it. I'm like, I fucking ranked it higher than Ian did last month. Get off my ass.
Yeah. I don't like hate the deck. I just hate playing against it because I think there's been so much of like, once again, another thing where it feels like there's space to innovate and it hasn't been. And however, you'll see I have it ranked higher this month because guess what people are doing? Innovating.
Whoa!
I'm gonna keep saying this shit. If we're gonna do monthly month-to-month reports, I'm gonna keep promoting the people that are trying new things and having them succeed. It's crazy.
Bizarre. I can't imagine why you would do that. Number six, Ian. Last month you had Tivit, Seller of Secrets. This month, what do you got?
Yeah, I got Tevesh Krom this month. Been putting up good numbers, not you know, it's I think it's just putting up solid numbers, right?
Welcome back to reality, Ian. You had Tevesh Krom at three last month.
It's you know, the grand majority of folks are playing the deck right now and sort of, you know, battling it out to see where it lands. It's putting up blue farm numbers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which means it's still a very good deck, but turns out the top spots right now are involving a lot of people taking crowbars to the best decks. And so I think between one and six, I would happily play anything for my one and six. Honestly, I'd play anything in this top 10, right? But like my one and six, right. One through six this month feel like, yeah, literally any of these is sick, right? Like easy.
Yeah. You know? So. Easy. So Tali Primal Conqueror is number five, right? Yeah.
No, it's number one.
Obviously. My number six is also Tevesh Krom. Stays exactly where it was last as where it is last month. Weirdly, its numbers are pretty identical to Rog'Sai's, which is partially why it is exactly where it is. And the big difference between the two is Tevesh Krom won a tournament and Rog'Sai didn't. That's how we do breakers, baby. Tevesh Krom number six. I don't know what else to say about it. It's like it plays like Tivit, but it's Grixis, and it's like that's the thing. I like the deck. It's Cal approved.
Wow, you're so descriptive, Cal. I love it.
I know, I'm so good. Everything. What happened to everything can't be a metaphor or something about that, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, you know how when you're driving a car and you're like five lanes back, what do you have here at number five, Ian?
Well, at number five, Cal, I have with the largest fall from grace in history of this podcast, Kinnan, down here at number five. Remember, these are month to month reports, and therefore I will be indicating where decks look in the current metagame, given the metagame. Now, Kinnan, which everybody and their mother was like, Kinnan's got a pretty big target on its head. That deck is still performing really, really well. Upwards of 20 conversion rate is still really, really good. I still think the deck's stupid in a good way. It's just, I mean, one.
Had a horrible month.
It had a bad month. Because guess what? It's public enemy number one right now.
Yep.
Number two, the pilots who are known for playing it prominently, apart from we had like Ping Pong do have a good result in that German tournament. But apart from that, Wounded Satellite has not been playing Kinnan, who has been, guess what, artificially boosting Kinnan's numbers for a really long time. Mm-hmm. We also had no major tournaments where people like myself brought them, right? So like Kinnan's still doing decently. Had a bad month. The most common high performing pilots, we only had one of them show up this month and do well with it. That's it is what it is. There's also gonna be slow months for decks, and I think this is just a slow month for Kinnan, especially once again still having over 20% when everybody's like Kinnan has to die, let it bleed out in the ground.
Yeah, it's the fact that it had the numbers it had and it didn't just get buried is very like notable. Yeah, it
says a lot about the deck.
Yeah. Yes.
And unlike Tevesh Krom, or Timna Krom, pardon me, it's a little bit easier to attack Kinnan with certain pieces, right, than it is to attack Timnachrom, right? Because at the end of the day, Timnachrom is just like generic value pile. Like, you can't play like Craft Digger's Cage and hate it out, right? You can, it hurts, right? But like,
they just play around it, right? Like, it's
right. So that being said, there's certain pieces you can throw at Kinnan that more aggressively target its game plan. And the fact that, once again, I think it's been pretty heavily targeted this month and it's still doing well says a lot about the deck.
Well, I mean, we're
to
that point, though, we're seeing Rog'Sai do stuff like playing Curse Totem. Like, I think that is very notable, right? Like, it shows how much the meta is moving in that direction of like reacting to
innovation, just model stuff I'd said we should do like 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's all a circle. It really is.
Because like, my favorite story is still like when they were like, oh yeah, Zane's new tech on Rog'Sai, Grinding Station. And I was like, you mean one of the first cards we ever put in Rog'Sai in the original primer? Yeah, new tech. Like, but it's funny. CDH is like that, right? And I love that we have meta flow. It makes that good. It makes the format interesting. There's no stagnancy when people are forced to innovate. If I'm going to keep saying that, innovate, right? It's what's going to keep people on their toes, right?
I think Mikey said something really interesting. It was either on Twitter yesterday or the day before, but he said something about how, like, it might have been Drake. He and Drake were talking about something, but it's like we're kind of entering that phase of CEDH where we're like learning how to properly adjust for metas.
Yep.
And that is something that I think we're seeing a little bit with Rog'Sai, where we're seeing Rog'Sai go from like, we're trying to just like this insular meta, this blah, blah, blah. And now we're seeing Rog'Sai do this thing where it's like, hey, we're going to try to adjust for like, we're seeing a bunch of Kinnan and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And
you have to pre-pack your sideboard in CEDH, right? So like you're definitely seeing, I mean, people like myself and Wounded and Freedom and other people like that, and a lot of the Rog'Sai pilots have been grinding away and making meta adaptations this time. But now we are starting to see it on this mass scale where folks are like, oh yeah, this is part of the format now. We have to adapt.
And I mean, like, to your point, right, is every time we go to an event, and I'm always playing Tivit because I am Tivit pilled. I have a list, and I always bring with me like 10 or 15 cards.
Oh yeah.
That where it's just like, I kind of vibe out what the competition is going to be like the day before, going around, look, what are people playing? What am I feeling is going to happen? And then the night before, all right, what are we doing? And so it's like that, those are things you kind of have to do. And we're seeing that. And I think that it definitely is cutting into Kinnan's numbers right now.
Yep, agreed.
My number five, this is where I have Kenrith the Return King down one spot from last month. Kenrith continued to do well. I don't know how it did when you scale tournaments up, but it again won two tournaments, had an 8% top four percentage and a pretty on par top 16 percentage. Around 24%. So like it did exactly reasonable numbers for a deck that I put a little bit higher last month and had a couple tournament wins to put under its belt. Like it feels like a deck that while you might not need to worry about it at a big tournament, it's worth paying attention for and keeping your eyes out when you're in these smaller venues. So I think it's worth keeping an eye out.
50-60 person tournaments, they seem to keep getting clowned on by Kenriths.
Yeah.
And that seems to be it, right? Like if you up the numbers, as you kind of mentioned, it sort of trickles down a lot more. I don't really know what the mental sort of barrier is.
I don't know if that is because players are taking different decks to bigger tournaments, and so you just have like different people taking them to big tournaments.
I also can say, I think the more prolific pilots like don't play online. They play like a bunch of their 50-60 person more localized events, right? So sometimes you're just going to see that stuff, right? Because like there was no platinum sized event this month that wasn't like a Star City, which doesn't make it onto these things, right? So like, which is important to recognize the numbers, right? Like some of these larger tournaments like Star Cities and stuff like that, they don't always make it onto EDH Top 16, right? So that is kind of food for thought there for some of that, right? But most of these tournaments out there, a lot of them do. But there are numbers definitely missing from some of this representation that we should keep in mind.
Yeah. I always try to make sure that I have that, but I kind of forgot that There was a SCG at Hartford this past month. Yeah, yeah. Hartford. Moving on up to number four, Ian, what do you got here at number four? You had Sisse last month. What do you got here?
I got Rock'Side.
Rock'Side. All right. Moving on up.
Yeah, I mean, 30% conversion rate does not lie, right? Like, and once again, I'm always going to, as I've said for six or seven times in this episode, reward innovation, right? We see people like Mikey pushing these winter orb strats and stuff like that, and it's like,
Mikey, that was I took one list look at that deck list and I was like, love this. Yeah. This is beautiful.
Yeah. And it's like, do I know that, like, specifically Winter Orb is the thing that's going to solve the metagame? No. Do I know that, like, all of his adaptations are going to completely break everything? No. But what I'm seeing is he's trying new stuff. He's pushing the archetype. He's pushing new cards in there. And it's adapting to the metagame that exists out there. And I have nothing to do but respect that. You know, and obviously there are other pilots out there also putting in work to the list specifically. Yeah. I just happen to know a lot of Mikey's work pushing stuff like Winter Orb. I know Zane's on it too and stuff like that. But there are people pushing the archetype, not just letting it rest, not just being like, why isn't it doing it anything? Like they're changing things, they're adapting, and they're adapting on a larger scale, and I love to see it.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Now we just gotta figure out how to get them to convert those top fours into tournament ones.
It's tough. That's, it's tough, right? Like you sit down in the top four, top 16 table, right? Like, and you know, I was at the tournament I was at this weekend. Devrick did convert to top four with Rock'Sai, to be fair. We lost to Sisse on the play.
I also think it's worth noting too. And I think this is the hurdle for Rock'Sai in this, in the, like, converting the top, the tournament one is Rock'Sai, I think, is just such a boogeyman when you sit down, especially at a top 16 table or top four table, that people are their ears are immediately raised. They're immediately on, like, high alert, and they are packing opening hands that are either trying to race you and do their thing first or stop you from doing your thing. And like the whole table is doing that. So I think that's one of the things where Rock'Sai is just kind of, because of its, what is it, its reputation, it kind of is predisposed to doing worse after the cut. I think that it can break through. I really do. And so
I think so too.
My number four is where I have Sisse, Weatherlight Captain. This is a move up for Sisse. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to say, Sisse just kind of had a good month. 30%, well, 29% win percentage, 34% top 16. Did the 10% top four percentage, which, you know, as I said last month, when decks crack, that double digit number for top fours, that's when I go, all right, well, there's a little bit more here than, you know, we might be thinking. And something that I think is notable is that when you have these, and I think I said this pre-show, but when you have decks that can consistently put up like high numbers, anywhere from like 7 to 12% top four percentage, the amount that they are getting to those top fours, they will eventually convert those to tournament wins eventually. And we're going to see that later on with one of my other decks here in this top five. But Sisse definitely falls into that category where it's just kind of been chugging away, had a slower month in January, and then February came in, had a great month. Sisse here at number four. Ian, number three, what do you have here at three?
I think this is the highest I've had this guy in a while, but Tivit, I got number three. Had a good month. You know, as much to be said. Tivit is also just right now killing it, right? People are bringing the deck. It's coming back a little bit. I don't know if that's because it does better in online spaces. I'm not really sure. I've been working on some innovations of my own with the archetype. It's got some new pieces that I think are kind of neat. I don't particularly know why Tivit has such an aggressive ebb and flow. I think it really does depend on, like, you know, when Kinnan's the boogeyman in the format, everyone's like, yo, Tivit's kind of my bestie right now. Like, yeah, play that Gravedigger's Cage, play that Cursed. I mean, I genuinely think that's a big part of it, right? So when Tivit becomes the boogeyman again, it's going to suck for a little bit. And then, you know, it's a little bit of back and forth. I'm definitely going to be trying some new spice with Tivit in the next couple months, which I'm going to throw your way after this episode because I think you might enjoy it. But like at the end of the day, Tivit is a very flexible option, right? Its biggest downside is that it does not have red. But at the end of the day, like it's still a very solid list. One card combos, Dockside, Thor, or not Dockside. Oracle console.
We just said it doesn't have red.
It's got cat lines. Like, so there's a lot going on to it. A lot of people are, once again, another deck people are innovating. You know what I mean? People are playing like Catalyst Tivit and like stuff like that. Yeah. So like there's always stuff happening.
Well, and then you had like a handful of people that I've been kind of like talking to that have kind of I haven't seen people kind of pull from the Shieldred necessarily, but have taken that Shieldred lesson. That we can use our windfalls and our time twisters and stuff like that in a more creative way, specifically with Bowmasters. And so people are kind of learning how to play the attrition plan with this deck in a way that I think is something that we have not seen in the past outside of the, I think that's the thing where I finally saw people this month, not just windmill slam Tivit. People have figured out that Tivit is your finisher, and that is good job. But my number three, this is where I have Kinnan Bonder Prodigy. I did not punish it nearly as harshly as you did, mostly because of the fact that I think that it has built up the benefit of the doubt on my end, where I think that Kinnan, like I've said this a lot with Tivit, right? Where Tivit has kind of like has this pedigree and has this like DNA of a deck where I'm going to keep it at three because it just like has the, you know, for a while I've kept it at three because it just kind of has that DNA where I can kind of keep it at a spot where I feel comfortable with, despite, some underperforming. And I think Kinnan's very similar in that regard where, my opinion of Kinnan is still extraordinarily high. I don't want to penalize it too heavily for a rough month because I, would be kind of talking out of my ass, honestly, if I did. But Kinnan for me is just, it backs a little bit from a numbers perspective. But again, like we have said a lot this episode, a lot of that has to do with the fact that the meta is shifting to address it. So we will find out if Kinnan can shift with that meta and answer that adaptation that is happening where people are packing interaction for what Kinnan does. If Kinnan can recover from that and come back and have even just an average month, I think Kinnan can just sit right where it's at and be safe. If Kinnan continues to have months like it did this month, I think we're going to have to readdress whether or not how highly we hold the stack. But for the most part, I think Kinnan has proven itself over the past year to be a top dog. And so I'm going to keep it here at number three. Number two, Ian, what do you have here?
I have Sisse at number two.
Yeah.
Sisse had an incredible month, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, I literally just lost to it in the finals of the King's Court 2K. I think one thing really not being talked about right now as much as it should be is and here's another little fun key phrase that I'm going to keep repeating is that people are innovating with Sisse.
Whoa, that's the first time I've heard you say that on this podcast.
Yeah, for sure. No, but like actually it's happening, everybody. Yeah, there are so many good things happening with Sisse.
There are so many Sisse variants floating around right now that I have no fucking idea what I'm playing against when I see
Sisse. That's one of the best parts of Sisse, right? So we have the classic Planeswalker Tutor Chain Sisse, right? Yep. We have Clam Chowder Sisse, which is the Massachusetts variant that is literally just like NBC Sisse, right? Now we have hybridized versions of Sisse running around that are half, like basically the idea of the Planeswalker lines without actually having to go through the Planeswalker lines. We have Tutor Chains variants of Sisse that are going up with the Cultist Dehada Chromatic Ori lines
and
that
like,
aren't even touching the Planeswalkers.
We have the version that like Sick Robot and yeah. the like into That's the North guys they're working on clam chowder, right? That's what I thought.
And so like there's so many different versions of this archetype, and the commander allows that flexibility, that mm-hmm. allows that amount of ambiguity as to what the fuck it's actually doing. Right. So with
a good heuristic for this deck. Don't let them just search with Sisay. Just heads up. If somebody sits down at a table and it's just like, just one Sisay tutor, don't worry about it. Worry about it.
Count the amount of legendary permanents they have and then worry about it accordingly, right? Like Sisay plus two is the part where you should be concerned.
Yeah, keep those ears raised, boys and girls. Like
That's always the scary number, though. Like if you're looking at Sisay plus two, that's the point where you have to start worrying, right? Yeah. Sisay plus anything else, it's maybe a little bit more like you can talk shop, right?
Yeah.
And for the love of God, do not let Sisay players just say, I'm going to activate and get something that helps us. Have them give you an answer.
They never get you something that helps you. They never do.
No, they can. But have them describe the card that they are acquiring.
Have them tell you explicitly what they are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't implicitly
be like, oh, I've got something that could help us out. No, fuck you. What are you tutoring? there's no games. There's no coy bullshit. You tell me what you're acquiring out of your deck. That is the only way Sisay gets to do anything. And that's what you got to hold it to, right? But if they're like, you'll have to see. No, Sisay dies. I don't care. No ambiguity. No bullshit. You're telling me what you're getting, or else Sisay's not doing anything. And that's the kind of line you have to draw in the sand with Sisay, right?
Yeah.
And once again, you can do that stuff, and then suddenly the clam chatter variant's like, hey, breach line. And they're like, bruh? Like that is the thing in this deck, right? And that is where the power level comes in, right? Sisay strong. Look out for it. It's a powerful deck. It will continue putting up wins. And the innovation and flexibility from this commander is clearly demonstrating that we have just broken the surface. I literally, in a coaching session last night, worked on a hybridized version that is using none of the old tech that I was using and is doing completely different shit. And it's still really fucking good.
I mean, so I'm planning on going back to work on the like Weatherlight consultation variant that I had built because I like genuinely think that there is something there of the just like, okay, I'm just gonna play five color good stuff, and like, you know, it's not that different from like the clam chowder variant, honestly, but like do it, and definitely like it has a little bit to do with the fact that I did get my hard boiled Jace that I do want to use.
I did think about that as well. Yeah.
I kind of want to use it. But also I do think that is like a real thing, cause it's very difficult to interact with. But that being said, I totally agree with you. My number two, what do you think it is, Ian? It's a big shocker.
Is it Tivit?
It's Tivit. Wow. We're so surprised. This is a shocker to everybody. Tivit moved up one and Kinnan moved down one. Wow. Tivit did exceptionally well this month, almost a 31% win percentage, 30.7%, which is pretty damn close. Three tournament wins, 12% top four percentage, 36% top 16 conversion percentage. Like the deck just, silence the haters, all the haters and losers out there. Tivit did great.
All the haters and losers.
All the haters and losers. Wow. Well, because they're too busy losing to Tivit.
I see.
No, but truthfully though, like what I said earlier about how if a deck can hit that like 7 to 12% top four percentage, right, where you're getting to those top fours in that 7 to 12% area, you are going to eventually just have months like this where you consistently hit. It's like, to some extent, it's like banging your head against a brick wall where eventually you're gonna hit it so many times that it breaks. And so Tivit broke through this month, that's what I have to say about Tivit. Very happy to see Tivit do well. And I'm excited to see what your list is. Cause I love spice. I love unhinged, deranged Tivit stuff. It's my favorite thing. So, moving on to number one, man, I'm really going to be shocked at what you have at number one. You go first. What do you have?
Yeah, this is almost like
is a this where you have Kirk?
Yeah, Kirk. Yeah. Burp, burp. Okay. It's a dolly. No, similar problem. I think one important thing to note about like looking at Simnerprob's record, because like, you know, technically speaking, it did have a lower top 16 percentage.
It had a slower month.
Yeah, it's still the most represented deck right now. Right.
Like a significant margin.
It also has, 11 top fours. Like it is. And three wins. Like, so like, you know, yeah, it's being represented a bunch. Yeah. The masses bring the deck down a little bit, but the deck is still freaking good. There's something to be said about like, OK, if every deck had 150 participants in every month, would it look the same? Probably not. Right. I would be really curious to see how that goes. But it is hard to argue the blue farm is obviously still very much putting up the same numbers, putting up the same results. You know, my own argument there is kind of a counter argument for why Kinnan did poorly. Right. But like it's still. Yeah. And honestly, like now that I look at like the top 16 numbers and top four numbers, I'm like almost wanting to just throw Kinnan back up to like three. But like that being said, you know, part of this list is me saying, like, what would I bring to a tournament, right? I would not bring the boogeyman of the format to a tournament right now. Mm-hmm. However, the consistently best deck that for some reason people aren't treating like the boogeyman of the format.
This is what I don't get. I was going to say this at some point. We have talked about Tivit being a boogeyman. We've talked about Kinnan being a boogeyman. We've talked about Rog'Sai being a boogeyman.
Yep.
Not once have we been like, the best deck is the boogeyman. Not once.
Yeah.
I don't get that. How does that make any sense?
It stays out of the cultural zeitgeist, Cal. Like, it is the most stupid shit in the entire world. It drives me fucking nuts. Like, genuinely, because people are just like, oh, yeah, Tim Nagram's really good. And you're just like, and do something about it.
This is the thing that I want to hammer home on this episode. Listen, guys. It's not that it's really good. It's on its worst month. It's still doing better than most decks. This is like its worst month that it's had since I started tracking these numbers.
Yep.
By a lot. And it's still head and shoulders better than anything else out there. Like, it's just, I don't get it. Like, there are a few exceptions, right? Like, Tivit had a better month. Sisse had a better month. Like, but those decks also don't have, or like, those decks also have horrible months where they are like Kinnan is the same way, right? This is the only deck in the format that it's like when it bottoms out, it's still like at the top end of the bottom. Or does that make sense? It's like its bottom is still the top end for everybody else. It's like, how is this not the boogeyman? This needs to be the boogeyman. Worry about Tim Nakron. Don't let them get away with bullshit. This is your PSA.
Yeah. I agree with you. It's literally just a deck that
it's a deck. Well. That is true. It is a deck.
I'm just like it consistently does well, and it's just so insane that like you're
right, nobody's caught on.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now, are there like silver bullets that completely take this deck out? No. Should we let them have Timna as often as we do? No.
I'm gonna cast Timna. Guys, come on. We know this. We have the technology. We know how to handle this deck, and it's just nobody worries about it because it. And I think this is part of it, right? Is the commanders when you see them are pretty unassuming. Because they're just card advantage. So you don't like you look at them and you're just like, it's not a big deal. But they're a big deal. Worry about those cards. Don't let Krom hang around. Don't let Timna hang around. Like, deal with those cards. All right. So that's our top 10 for this month. It was a pretty interesting one. You had a lot of movement on yours. Mm-hmm. And mine was I think going into it, I was kind of like pretty upfront about it, like where I was just like, there's not a lot of movement on mine this month. It's like a lot of really just like jockeying for position on mine. And I would really like to move Tim Nacrom down deeply, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. If trends continue this way.
Unless you do something about it. Viewer at home, so you be the not Tim Nacrom you want to see in the world.
It's what's the saying? It's like if I don't say something, nobody will, something like that. If you don't do something about Tim Nacrom, nobody will.
It's if you see something, say something.
No, you're thinking way too much like Stranger Danger. I'm talking a lot more philosophical.
The thing they tell people at airports when you see terrorist activity, but yeah.
I guess that's kind of Stranger Danger. In a really like specific definition that. That's our top 10. Thank you all for tuning in. Again, we had a lot of engagement on our last episode about doing merch and stuff like that. So we will we appreciate that. Let us know more in the comments about some things that you would be interested in on those things so we can kind of work on that. Again, I said this in our Patreon Discord, but I'm going to kind of echo it here, is that we are working on the Patreon and getting that revamped. And I know I've been saying that for like 6 fucking months, but I do actually mean that genuinely. Because of the fact that my wife is helping me revamp the Patreon, and she just kind of got done doing her dissertation and doing interviews for a fellowship and all of that stuff. And then we went to Chicago, and there's just a lot of stuff at the beginning of the year where it was just a lot of life happened. You moved. So it was like we weren't able to meet about fucking anything.
Yep.
And so it's just like, we are working on that. That is a priority for us. We also want to make sure that we don't half-ass it. And we want to do it well for you guys. And so that's part of the delay in that, is we want to make sure we're doing right by y'all. And so that is honestly my number one concern, is I don't want to like just half-ass it. And that's my
biggest thing. Favorite response to that last week in the comments was, if the design is good.
If the design is good, yeah.
I figured you would want to buy something that looks like, thank you for contributing nothing.
Thank you. It's honestly, though, that's more helpful than some comments that we get sometimes. So I appreciate anything that is at minimum nothing.
We will take every crumb of bread you would like to leave at our starving feet.
Listen, I'm poor. I just spent a lot of fucking money on replacing a computer. I will take whatever you can throw at me. So speaking of taking anything we can throw at you, Ian, you do coaching. How can people do you find that?
Yeah, if you would like to talk about some innovation in CEDH, you can find me over youtube.com/comedianmtg, which is my other channel. You can catch me doing top 16 breakdowns, deck techs, all of that stuff. We are the very tournament focused CEDH channel over there at Comedian MTG. Comedian being lacking in some of the content and more.
This is the funny channel.
My disclaimer.
The Comedian channel is the serious one.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, if you would like to receive coaching, I do that as my full-time job. I have a number of different accolades for CEDH tournaments. If anyone's curious about that, I can send you the entire Google Doc. It fills up an entire page as far as top results in CEDH, most of them with different CEDH decks. So
don't forget, MLC champion.
First MLC champion. Yeah, that's the one that people think of for sure. But if you like coaching from me, you can find me at a number of different places, comedianmtg@gmail.com. You can find me at Discord at comedian_mtg or at comedianmtg on Twitter. But all of those things are pinned on my YouTube channel comments. So go find those. You can find out how to find me, and Cal is lovely enough to post them here as well.
Of course. So, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Mind Sculptors. Make sure you head over to patreon.com/the Mind Sculptors. Help support us over there. So while you're at it, make sure to park your Lime scooters not in front of people's doors. Bringing it full circle. This is Lime Sculptors. I think
it's rude that you would accuse our audience of being those inconsiderate Lime scooter parkers.
That's true. Spread the word. I know that we have good eggs, good noodles in our audience, and so tackle
your local Blue Farm player off of their Lime scooter.
This has been the Mind Sculptors. We'll see you next week.
Bye.